Dub Lab. Hello, this is Hannah at Dub Lab Studio in Los Angeles. Welcome to a new episode of the Arts, Music, and New Tech podcast series created by Your Mom's Agency. Together with YYMA in Berlin and Bulk Space in Detroit, we have relaunched the music exchange and contest platform EXP under the patronage of the German-American Friendship Initiative Wunderbar Together from spring to fall of 2021. Today's installment is a recap of two EXP workshops, one by Bana Hafar from the Beirut Synthesizer Center pop-up in Lebanon, co-presented with Peter Kiern at CDM, and the other by Simone Jones in Berlin. First, let's hear Bana's piece about how to get into modular synthesis. Then Simone will explain how AI and NFTs could be part of your music practice.
Hi, this is Bana, coming to you from the Beirut Synthesizer Center. Today we're going to be talking about modular synthesizers. I'm going to be doing kind of an intro to modular. Hopefully this video will demystify these strange instruments for those who are not familiar, and for those who are familiar, hopefully your knowledge can be filled in a little bit with maybe information that you weren't already aware of. So modular synthesizers, what are they? Why do we use these instruments? Why do we lug these heavy things around with patch cables instead of just making our lives easier and using a hardwired synth? Because they're amazing and they offer a lot more flexibility. So behind me, there's a hardwired synth. Hardwired as in all the patch, all the connections have been pre-configured below the hood. And all you have to do is play the keyboard and sound will immediately come out, and you can change presets and, you know, do a little bit of tweaking, but not nearly as much as a modular synthesizer. So if you think of the analogy maybe of a sandwich, the hardwired keyboard is like a pre-built burger or something, and the modular is like the open-faced sandwich version of it. So if you remove the black and white keys and you took all those circuits and put them upside down, you'd have a modular synthesizer. They don't make any sound on their own, so you have to connect them. And so these systems are made up of modules. This is a module. So a module is just a little circuit with a fancy faceplate and some jacks, which are inputs and outputs, and some knobs or pots or switches, depending on what it is. There are hundreds of, maybe thousands of different modules at this point, hundreds of different manufacturers, and it's kind of overwhelming at first, but it's definitely addictive. Anybody who's into modular will tell you that they're addicted to these things. And if you think about synthesizers, they actually all started off as modular. So in the mid-60s, when Bob Moog and Don Buchla were working on these, you know, or basically inventing the synthesizer, they invented the modular synthesizer. And it wasn't until later that the black and white keyboard was actually added. And the thought process behind that was that you had all these musicians using these modulars, lugging these giant modular cases around with these, whatever, hundreds of patch cables and complicated setups. And so Bob Moog kind of looked at this and was like, you know what? He noticed that a lot of musicians were using similar kind of they were building similar patches. So at that point, it was decided to just pre-configure those patches and just put them into the, you know, hide them under the hood so that the player could just play the keyboard and just have a few controls instead of having to physically patch every single module together. So that's just kind of a brief overview. So the system that I personally use is called a Eurorack system. That's the format. That's the modular format, and that just has to do with the size of the modules and certain power requirements. But the basics of synthesis are the same, whether you're using Eurorack or a different kind of modular or a hardwired synth. The basics are the same. You're still working with sound. You're still working with pitch, you're working with amplitude, you're working with timbre. It's still all about sound design. It's just how you approach it is very different on these instruments because as the user, you define where you want all the connections to go instead of using a machine where those connections have been predefined. So what that does is that it allows you to have a lot more control over parameters and the specifics of sound. So if we just take a moment and discuss the basics of sound and how they relate to these instruments. So you can start off with an oscillator, the oscillator in a modular synthesizer. Oscillators control the pitch of the sound and which is the frequency measured in hertz. And oscillators can also determine the timbre of the sound, which is the quality of the sound. And that first and foremost comes from the wave shape that you choose. So I'm going to take my patch cable and I'm going to patch, let's see, let's patch a triangle wave. Okay, so this is a triangle wave versus a sine wave versus a sawtooth wave. So that's the oscillator. Let's go back to the triangle. So the oscillator is going into the amplifier using a patch cable, and I'm changing the frequency. So high frequency, low frequency. So this oscillator is not going to make any sound unless I patch it with this patch cable. Which is the basis of this whole system. So that's pitch, and then amplitude is the loudness of the sound. And then, like we said, the timbre is the wave shape. So you have different oscillators in that are made by different manufacturers, and each oscillator has different characteristics to it, but the basic thought process is the same. You have a frequency knob and you have some inputs that allow you to control that frequency. So I have this oscillator and that's fine. It's a cool drone. We can zone out to that, but let's do something with it. So how am I going to change the pitch of this oscillator without a keyboard? The answer is voltage control, which is also the basis of all of this. So I'm going to take a, and just a side note on voltage control before we go any further. So voltage control is the basic, the way that these systems work are using voltage control. So if you think of the raw material that we're using is electrons. Basically, you have electrons flowing from the wall into these systems. And if you think of it like multiple streams, and there's a giant river kind of coming, like a river of electrons coming into your system, and that's being branched off into multiple streams, that's what's happening in a modular system. So you are able to control the flow of this electricity as it passes through the system using patch cables to connect one point to the next, and then using switches and knobs and potentiometers to kind of control the flow of the electricity going from one place to the other. So that's the basis of voltage control, which is the main language that this instrument speaks. So, speaking of voltage control, I'm going to now take a set of voltages and I'm going to send them from what's called my sequencer. I'm going to send it to my oscillator. So, just listen to what that sounds like. So we have our oscillator now that's being sequenced by the sequencer. So a set of stored voltages are being sent to the oscillator. So that would be equivalent of me playing that on a keyboard, but instead of playing it, I am using a sequencer to play it for me. And so you can think of a voltage control as a set of kind of invisible hands playing your frequency knob for you instead of you having to play them. So that's one example of control voltage. And there are different types of signals that you use with modular. So you have audio rate signals, you have LFOs, which are low frequency oscillators. And so low frequency oscillators, meaning it has the same qualities as an oscillator, but it kind of exists below audio rate. So you can use these LFOs to modulate certain things. So let's, for example, use an LFO to modulate the amplitude of the sound. So I'm going to attach an LFO into the amplifier with patch cables. And so just listen to what that sounds like. So now I have an LFO low frequency oscillator modulating the amplitude of our signal. So that's an example of an LFO. And you have gates also. So gates are important. If you think of a hardwired synthesizer, whenever you press a key, a black and white key, you're sending a gate signal that is opening the amplifier and telling it essentially to play. So in the context of the patch that I have going now, I have a gate signal that is basically pushing the sequencer forward. Every time a gate is received into the sequencer, it's moving forward one step. So those are gate signals. So you have LFOs, you have gates, you have envelopes, just like on regular synthesizers. So envelopes allow you to control the sound over time. So just listen to what an envelope sounds like. I'm going to apply an envelope to the sequence. So no envelope. And then we have an envelope. So the envelope allows you to control the sound over time and to control how the sound enters. So the attack, you can have a soft attack, this is a soft attack, a short attack. You can have a long decay, short decay. So I'm using the voltage that's generated from this envelope and I'm sending it to my amplifier, just like I use the pitch information that I'm sending to my oscillator. I'm sending the envelope to the amplifier. So those are some examples of CV or control voltage in action. So on a lot of synthesizers, you'll see the word CV or VC, VCO, VCA, VCF. That just stands for voltage control filter, voltage control amplifier, voltage control oscillator. So modular synthesizers, they speak voltage control. That's the basic language. And as Todd Barton says, you are only as expressive as your control voltages, and that's absolutely true. So when studying these and approaching these instruments, it's really worth spending time understanding control voltage, understanding the different signal types, and just finessing your CV source in relation to the destination, and really thinking about, okay, what parameter do I want to control in the sound, and how can I achieve that through voltage control? That's the basic thought process behind these instruments, and so when you are approaching these, You know, there's no right or wrong entry point. You don't have to know anything about music or music tech, or I mean, there are infinite entry points to these instruments, and everybody kind of arrives at these instruments from a different place. And I just encourage you to kind of synthesize your own approach to these instruments, and if you have friends that have some, definitely try them out before buying anything, and don't get caught up on the terminology at first, and just kind of get to know them and just get a feel for them.
Thank you. Hi everyone. So today is a super exciting topic about artificial intelligence and NFTs. But before we kind of dive into that, because we're gonna dive in deep. I kind of want to just give you a little bit more background information about myself. And for those of you that don't know who I am, I have a scientific background. I used to work as a scientist and hold a degree in the sciences, and currently I'm a music producer and singer, technologist. I like to build projects that integrate science, music, and art and technology in really interesting ways, whether it's doing research for working with scientific researchers at various institutions like CERN, where I created a project that integrated the particle collisions of the Large Hadron Collider there, and created a musical piece out of that. Sometimes I take audio samples from scientific data coming from different planets and stars and convert them into audio waves and play them on my keyboard. And I've always been interested in this intersection between science, music, art, and technology and innovation. And so that kind of naturally led me into an interest in artificial intelligence in music and NFTs. And where does that come from? I think it just stems from this natural curiosity that I have about the universe as both a scientist and artist. A scientist will look at the night sky and think of where did we come from? Who are we? And try and answer these questions with the scientific method and various research. And artists ask the same questions, like, who am I? Why am I here? And this insatiable curiosity that drives these questions leads both scientists and art to come up with really powerful, transformational changes in our lives and in humanity. And it just has to do with exploring the secrets of the universe and somewhere at the intersection between science and art, there's this really beautiful space that allows exploration and creativity and this idea that art, science, and technology are inseparable. So before I start talking about artificial intelligence and NFTs, I kind of want to define the terms, because they can be pretty all-encompassing and a little vague. So by artificial intelligence, I just mean a computer that doesn't really, it's programmed so that it, in a way, it thinks for itself, as in it's constantly learning and developing coding programs that are self-learning. So it kind of rewrites its program as it continues along. And NFTs, I don't know if you've heard of the term, it's been thrown around a lot. It's become like this buzzwordy thing in the visual art and music community right now. And it stands for non-fungible token. And it is a really abstract concept. So you have this token that you can purchase and sell and mint. And in other words, you can purchase it, you can sell it, and then the people who bought it can also resell that same token. And they are connected to cryptocurrencies, which have an appreciating value. So it's an interesting, it's an interesting investment in the sense of if you buy a work of art, if you buy a piece of music, if you buy a painting in a gallery, the currency of that purchase kind of stays stagnant. But with cryptocurrency, it's super interesting because you purchase an NFT in Ethereum or your coin of choice, and the value of that coin is also going to change as well as the value of the art. It could become completely valueless, or it could become, it could just become crazy expensive. I mean, we've all heard the story of the guy who bought and sold a couple of pizzas for for a couple of Bitcoin, and he would have been a millionaire if he didn't do that. So, I'll get a little bit more into how it works and different platforms if you're interested in creating your own NFTs. I mean, artists are selling their NFTs for millions right now. But it's a way of like creating artwork in the digital space as a tangible thing and selling it, because digital artwork is not really the same. It doesn't have the same tangible value as like buying a physical object. So it turns the value of a digital piece of anything, whether it's a photograph or a piece of music or a video, into this this tangible asset that you can own, purchase, buy, sell, and create with. So I'm going to talk a little bit about this NFT project that I'm doing right now. And it's a combination of, and the idea was inspired by a friend of mine that I worked with. I did an artificial intelligence project where I was a consultant for Red Bull. And I worked together with a guy named Joe Kavanaugh, and we invented this NFT project that we're going to be launching sometime this year. And again, COVID allowing, but so we were working on this AI project, which I'm gonna touch a little bit on in general about like the applications of artificial intelligence in music and how that's transforming the music industry. But he's a great innovator, and he has an innovation company, and we developed this NFT concept that we're going to be launching. And it's part performance, it's part NFT editions. So we have like NFTs for sale, and then there's also like a physical aspect of the NFT where I converted paintings of mine into NFTs. So the first part of it is this this experience where you attend a performance, and this is a video of me at an artist residency that I did a couple of years ago, where I created this immersive environment where I integrated science, music, and art in these like visual paintings. And I had another visual artist named Jem the Misfit, who I work with a lot. And I also roped into this NFT project. And she's a super talented like visual artist and VJ. And so we've performed a lot together. And so it made sense that I would rope her into this. And she created these beautiful visuals that kind of integrated different concepts of physics. So getting into like the actual content behind the NFTs that I made. So I have these like visual paintings. This one I did about the Big Bang, there's six of them as part of a collection. And I wanted to talk about different concepts in science that are mutually exclusive. So if one of them collapses, all of them collapse. So the Big Bang theory is about the birth of our universe and the thermodynamic birth in that sense. And the last painting of the series is a thermodynamic death of the universe. And I also have a painting on entropy and dark matter. And these are things that are integrated into the actual performance piece, but also into the NFTs. And so each painting has these open source computers that I built into the back of them that have LEDs built into them. And as you approach them, the colors inside of them change. They light up and they interact with you. And this is a hardware schematic of the computer hardware that's in the back of each one, and another performance. So, and this is a sample of the token that I will have for sale on OpenSea at some point, and in combination with this experience. So the idea would be that you will, the NFT is going to be part of the live experience. So your ticket, in a sense, is going to be an alpha token, which I think is a really an NFT token. It's called the alpha token. So the I think it's a really cool idea. Is like you purchase a ticket, but then you get an investment of a digital piece of artwork that you get to keep as a token, a memorable token for attending the event. And this is kind of an interesting way of approaching NFTs. So you have a lot of artists that will create these like digital pictures or digital like short video clips and sell them. And sell them online. And so, but people are also integrating NFTs into experiences, which I think is probably how it's going to transform the music industry, because it pulls the power away from mediators, right? So if you can, if you don't have to work with a ticket agency or a venue to promote and sell your work, then it kind of just opens up this world where like artists can have a direct link to their fans without having to go through labels and a long list of other mediators that kind of like convolute the artistic process, but also that also just are unnecessary in the future of music. But I wanted to jump into this idea of like interdisciplinary thinking in art and how that leads to integrating technology in different ways within creativity. So music and art is a really great way to bridge gaps between disciplines. So if you, for example, don't know how to play an instrument, but you feel musical, there is a ton of tools that exist to like help you create and produce music that don't involve you going to piano lessons or guitar lessons, but you can still have high creative capacity. And for production tools, there's a ton of companies that are just popping up, and by a ton, I mean in the hundreds, for artificial intelligence in music. And it was part of my job at Red Bull to research these companies and come up with a project, which I can't talk about, but to develop artificial intelligence in music. And it's a really interesting way of just bridging this gap between different practices of science and art. But it definitely requires diverse thinking. You know, thinking about artificial intelligence makes you redefine what does it mean to be a human making art in the first place, and how is that different from a computer? And if I'm really involved in technology and I'm using technology to create, you know, to express this artistic idea that I have inside of me, how is that more or less valuable than playing an actual instrument, or could it be a deeper expression of my art, or a lesser one, or what does it actually mean to be like a human creating art, and can a computer even replace that one day? It's kind of a scary thought. So this idea of like your identity and the collaborative aspect of art is really being flipped on its head when it comes to talking about artificial intelligence. And there's this really great video of a computer that's doing the Turing test, which is this test where you can tell whether or not something is distinguishable from an AI or computer. And so you have this guy that's playing jazz music and a computer that's like responding back and forth between him. And it's absolutely incredible what's going on right now with AI and music in general. And to tell you a little bit about the tools, so you have, and I don't want to like promote any specific companies because there's a lot of them, but I'm just going to touch on a couple of them. So you have Amper Music, which is this platform. It's kind of like a recording digital audio workstation or a DAW, and you can basically have these MIDI tracks where you have an AI that will generate MIDI information for you. So it'll create like the pianos and all of the instrumentation, and then you can export them. You can produce within the platform, but you could also pull those ideas out. And and it's a really interesting tool to like create like a collaboration between AI and humans. But then you also have these companies that are creating full score for people who have like YouTube channels or like low budget films that are classical compositions. They sound fantastic. Like you can put what you want inside of these algorithms and be like, okay, I want like a moody, like down tempo, blah, blah, blah song. And then the AI will just pop out like something for you and you can purchase them. There's even AIs that are collecting royalties right now. The first royalty company was the royalty company in France there's an AI that's collecting royalty checks. And then there's another company called HumTap, which you download an app on your phone and you hum into the phone. So you hum a melody into it and it will create a fully produced track based on what you're humming. So it'll hum the melody and then you can choose the genre like trap or 80s like synth pop or Arabic. And it'll just like, it'll create what you hummed as like a fully produced track. And Google Magenta is another resource that has a lot of tools where you can get short AI generated melodies and then use those as a starting point for your music. And there's a lot of different, I think they've got like six or seven different music making tools that are artificially intelligence aided. And probably one that I use is just regularly in my production work is there's a mastering suite. So when you're done recording and mixing your music, you get it mastered to make sure that the levels are the same and it sounds good, you know, on your shitty headphones versus like a huge PA in a club. So mastering is like this ambiguous, I don't know, a profession where, it's a very difficult thing to do in general. So usually you send it out to a mastering studio, which is like a specially designed mastering studio, but there's an AI. There are several different AI tools that will analyze your music and do automatic mastering within like just a couple of minutes. I don't use those to like publish music, but I use them to like get really good demo recordings if I'm producing for another artist or just have like a really good reference point of songs. And artificial intelligence is coming for the music industry, and it's also coming for the jobs of the just technology in general is with NFTs is coming for all of the middlemen I don't want to say like take money away from the artist, but like that use their gatekeeping skills to as a commodity to like expose their work to artists. And NFTs is an interesting way of flipping that over on people's heads in a way, even in a visual art sense. So you have, and if there's an NFT that is sold for like, you know, over double digit millions. And it normally that that kind of normally that kind of sale would be run and profited on by an art gallery. So the fact that like you have artists that are able to put out their work and get it into the hands of people who are collectors without a gallery taking 50% of the profit is very attractive. And 50 is the standard. Oftentimes it's 60 for visual arts. It is very attractive for, and so a lot of artists and just business people in general are like flocking towards the NFT community to create and to share their work. And, you know, it's definitely something that can be a little bit scary, as in like sometimes change can be scary because it a lot of times technology can be disruptive to industries and they tend to collapse before they get rebuilt stronger. And so if these tools become more of like a something that you integrate into your work rather than something that kind of like takes it over, then I think it could provide ways that enhance human expression rather than replace it. Because after all, we are we are the original first ancient instruments. Like our bodies are these wonderful collection of particles that have existed since the beginning of time. I mean, we literally have particles in our body that were there during the creation of our universe. And so away we human beings are ancient celestial instruments. So I just wanted to end on that idea. So thank you.
Thanks for listening. We also played The Silver Cord by Simone Jones and Castles in Beirut by Bana Hafar. Join the Facebook group EXP to access all workshop podcasts and discover new music made in LA, Detroit, and Berlin. And thanks to all of our collaborators, Bulk Space in Detroit, CDM.link, 4Culture Radio, the Goethe Institute in Chicago, Reboot FM, Your Moms in Berlin, and our main partner, Wunderbar Together. This is Hannah at Dublab in Los Angeles. Signing off now. Have a great day.